This episode of Nerd and Tie is brought to you by listeners like you. If you would like to help sponsor Nerd and Tie, go to www.gofundme.com/nerdandtie and help contribute to our legal fund. Or you can go to nerdandtie.com and click on the sponsor information on the top thing on the page with the thingy and the button and contribute. And we'd say your name here on an episode and tell everyone how awesome you are. Because you are awesome. If you help us. Because we're awesome, and it's the transitive property. It's a thing. Check your math book.
On this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie, the original Cybermen are coming back to Doctor Who. Logan is the saddest, face-stampingest movie of the year. The Power Rangers are having their ultimate marathon on Twitch, and Punk Convention is coupled with an empty math bag. This Fortnite on Nerd and Tie.
That sort of worked.
Yeah.
Again, the intro audio just hates Nick. That's what we've all learned.
What it is, it will never let, even from my brand new studio, which I'm recording out of, which I'm excited about.
You should introduce us, Nick.
I'll think about it. Yeah, coming at you from the brand new Nick Izumi studio is myself, Nick Izumi, sitting there in the middle, being awesome. We got Trey Dorn.
Yo.
Kai, watch. And barely, having just barely avoided the little shamara in the corner, we got Gan Prock.
Boy, it's me.
Gendryman.
It's good again.
And for those of you who don't know, this is actually the second take at our intro. If you feel like looking
literally
at the,
is good again. Ah.
If you feel like looking at the original take, it is technically still in our Ustream archive. Well, for the next month it will be. So you can go to our Ustream account and go look at that and feel shame for what happens when Skype destroys us.
Heart and soul.
No famous people may have died during this before this episode was recorded, but our souls died.
Yeah, it's been a good one of not having any famous people deaths, but we have an empty mailbag, so that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's maybe we're stuck in an alternate universe where the world is like standing still or something. It's and I should say that we should knock on wood because we're recording this Sunday night. And hopefully no one famous has died between now and when the episode is released on Monday morning.
It's like, oh, my house is built in 1920, so there's lots of wood to knock on.
There's
Yay.
A wooden chair in my office, so.
Anyway.
Bunk build my dad built.
Right nice.
It's, very it's, nice. It's, you know, it's surprisingly hard to find wood in a modern office because all of my furniture is made out of cheap, like, plywood and particle board. And
oh, all my tables are plastic in here.
Yeah. So the chair,
I don't want to know what this desk is made out of.
The only wood in my office that I'm 100% sure is actually wood is the wooden chair that is the second chair in the studio here. If someone was actually in the Lafayette studio with me. And then the frame on the antique lighting board I have hanging on my wall. The rest of this, I don't even know. Like, the door frames in this apartment are not even made of wood.
Weird.
They have, like, a fake wood grain printed on it, and I swear to God they're plastic.
You know what else was made of wood at one point?
What?
A Cyberman. I'm gonna check. I see. I
want to question that.
That was a plot point of that was one of the.
Oh my god! I forgot about that.
That was one of the many incredibly stupid plot points of Matt Smith's last episode, which leads me to which was the first thing that made me think that the classic Cybermen had already come back, because that was one of the dumb plans the 80s Cybermen would have come up with. You know,
get the story started, Nick.
Anyway, yeah. So, speaking of the Cybermen, I a couple A couple months back, I remember on the show saying that I think the scariest and best Cybermen were the ones from the original 1960s episode, The Tenth Planet, and it's hard to get much better or scarier than them. Well, much to my joy, the original From Planet Mondas Cybermen are coming back to Doctor Who in Series 10, and they've got the goofy, cheesy silver jumpsuit costumes and everything, and I'm so excited, and it's going to be great to see Peter Capaldi face off with the original 10th Planet Cybermen. Or now, for those of you who aren't familiar, or maybe have only seen the new series, the Cybermen haven't always been these alternate universe,
well,
tragic characters that we get. Yeah.
Well, let's be clear. Not all the appearances of Cybermen in New Who have been the alternate universe Cybermen.
True.
It's just,
they've been kind of inconsistent on where the ones post Russell T. Davies come from.
Well, okay. So, and here's a picture of Peter Capaldi with the.
Oh, they're beautiful.
With the
by
old
the way.
Classic Cybermen here. Let me jump to a. There we go.
I love them so much.
But so we've seen Mondasian. Like, they've confirmed that a lot of the Cybermen in Moffat's days are supposed to be from Mondas. But the problem is that the show is on a budget. And,
right. You can't.
And costumes are expensive. So they got rid of the Cybus Industries logo on the costumes. But most of the costume parts were coming from that alternate universe Cybermen. So, like...
Then they briefly had the Kamen Rider Kabuto Cybermen, or the Tony Stark Cybermen, that stuck around for the last couple seasons.
Yeah, so it's like, we've the Cybermen we've seen actually mostly, like, recently on the show have been from Mondas, the 10th planet. Tell me if I'm mispronouncing that, because I haven't watched...
It's Mondas, yeah.
It's just been a long time since I watched any of those episodes, and I've probably read the word more often than I've heard it aloud. So it's going to be... we've had them, but they're going back to the original costumes from the 10th planet.
Which is cool. I'm sorry, just...
Well,
I really,
It's
a nice acknowledgement, because one of those things that you had in classic Doctor Who, and ironically, this is for all the times that people, after me talking about how great classic Cybermen are, I'm going to complain about something in classic Doctor Who. It's they would time travel with for a classic villain, and they would go back to, like, before previous events had happened, and then the prop that they used for the Dalek or the Cyberman was the brand new prop, or the recent prop,
right.
And then and you were just supposed to assume, like, oh, did they always look like that? Did the ones from before not count? And I'm really happy to see the original design being acknowledged here. It's...
Oh, yeah,
it's
no,
really
I'm,
fun.
I'm 100% with you on that. It's, like, it... The whole idea that, like, I don't know, blah. And this is going to be the episodes that these guys are going to be in are going to be the last two episodes of the season.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
So, because this is only going to be a 12-episode season.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Christmas special, because I think the previous Christmas special, while not an episode counted, was part of the production run. So instead of having 13, we have 12 episodes.
That makes
of the
sense.
Season proper. Series proper, sorry. British people and their whole thing.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, so I think it's, it's a little spoilery for the BBC to tell us all who the villain's going to be in the final episodes of the season, and considering that we just, like, Cybermen, didn't we just have Cybermen in a finale a couple years ago?
Well, who knows? My only other weird little, not even really a qualm, but there was a time a few years back when I was trying to write a Doctor Who fan film, and one of the scenes that I was going to use was my presumably future version of the Doctor would meet up with 60-style Cybermen. Because that would be a costume I could replicate on the budget that I was working
yeah.
with.
Yeah, no.
And
I
really, And I wanted to have this scene where the Cybermen come out of the shadows and the Doctor have a moment of, oh, that's right, you used to look like that.
although technically, aren't they 80s style Cybermen?
Yeah, that's true, because that took place in the far-off future of 1985.
Yeah. I was just saying.
The future!
I read a wiki before this episode. because, believe it or not, I don't keep all of the facts about everything that we ever talk about in my head all the time.
I care way too much about this one TV show.
I disagree. I think you care the exact right amount.
That's good to know. But yes.
Says the guy who is also on this podcast.
Hey, you. You're here too. In the words of Strong Bad. Oh, boy. But yeah, I don't know if there's much else to say. Manda, classic Cyberman costumes are back. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, I think it's nice to see Doctor Who going back to its roots.
Capaldi grew up with those costumes. Yeah. So it's even cooler that way.
Well, yeah, it's because he was, he watched the second Doctor growing up. But it's nice to see them going back to the roots now. The other thing, to move on to kind of our next story, talking about a franchise going back to really its roots, the most recent X-Men movie or X-Men Universe movie from Fox came out earlier about a week ago, and that is, of course, Logan, the third Wolverine movie, which got away with coming up with a way to call it something finally because the franchise is X-Men Origins Wolverine, the Wolverine. What are you going to call the third movie? Logan hit theaters, and it is the second rated R movie from the Fox studio in the X-Men franchise. Really, you know, one of the few. I mean, there have been other rated R superhero movies, but one of the few licensed rated R superhero movies. It was amazing. For those of you who have not seen the movie, we're going to avoid spoilers, mostly because I'm
looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. So I'm not going to talk about plot details, but obviously it's set in it's set about a little over 10 years in the future, in a future where there aren't really mutants anymore. The X-Men have kind of grown to were kind of a legendary status, and Wolverine starts the film. See, working as a down and out limo driver. It's the film is and taking care of an elderly Professor X, and of course he ends up, you know, having to take care of Laura X-23 from the comics. I don't think that's much of a spoiler because everybody and their mother guessed it. That, hey, Wolverine's taking care of a young woman with the same color hair and, young girl, because she's like 12 or in the movie. 12 or, yeah. But, it's incredible. I will say that I cried during this movie. I am not ashamed of that.
I'm getting ready to. Like, I feel so bad I didn't get to see it before the episode, but I'm so ready to cry my eyes out.
And since,
it's not
I
even
mean,
funny.
Both Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart have said that this is obviously going to be their last film that they do in the franchise, and it is a worthy film to go out on, and it's phenomenal. And I think that, people have talked about a lot of the reasons. Yes, it's rated R. Yes, it's highly violent, but it's really no more violent than the source material. It's rated R for purely
I did
for that
hear
violence.
It's the most face-stabbingest sad movie of the year, actually.
Yes. Yes, it is the most face-stabbingless sad movie of the year, but it owes a lot to a lot of the classic westerns, like Shane especially, and they overtly reference it, Shane, in the film, like down to showing, like watching it on television in the movie.
That's really cool, though, because that's appropriate for the character that they're using.
Yeah, no, it's It is really the first time since, the only time we've really seen this side of Wolverine, I think, really is in the first X-Men movie, which I think it nicely bookends, that Wolverine as reluctant murder dad, and that's really my favorite version of the character from the comics. I was a big, you know, it's Wolverine taking care of a young person who's looking at him like a father figure. It's pretty much like that's what he does.
That's when he's at his best.
That's when he's like, at his best. Whether it be Jubilee or Kitty Pryde or in the films Rogue or in this case X-23, that is my Logan. That is, you know.
For me, there are the two places where I really think Wolverine shines is either, in a father or older brother figure role, or in very personal stories. I think those are where he's always, like, my favorite Warren Ellis Wolverine story was, you know, a very personal one. I loved the movie The Wolverine.
Yeah, The really Wolverine. The Wolverine was good, but it showed that was much more of the 1980s Wolverine. A lot of the stuff in, like, there's a, I have the graphic novel compilation of a lot of the story from The Wolverine, or at least the X-Men issues that kind of coincided with the story told there. They're by Chris Claremont, and obviously the Frank Miller stuff, his limited series, was a huge influence on what happened, like the movie The Wolverine. And that's, I like that version of Wolverine. But I was a 90s comic reader, which was much more about reluctant murder dad. So in his solo stuff. So
Reluctant murder dad is a, that they could have called, that's what they could have called the movie. If they thought Logan wasn't descriptive enough, X-Men reluctant murder dad.
This is what I'm saying. I will say that, like, so people, like, obviously this and Deadpool, which was of course the other big, you know, last year's big hit from the Fox Studios. People like to make and yes, it's true that Logan probably wouldn't have been able to get a rated R cut done without success of Deadpool, and also Hugh Jackman volunteering to take a pay cut for this film, but it's made plenty of money, and people have talked about trying to make comparisons, but Deadpool is such a different movie. Deadpool, yes, it's very violent, but it's also very, it's a comedy, and also there's sexual content in Deadpool, and there's really zero there. Ew. I can't think of a single character where that would make any sense in the context of this film. And you know, if this film was made in the 90s, there would have been boobs somehow randomly, and there are none. I think that the there is one commonality between Logan and Deadpool, which have been two of the best superhero movies that have come out in recent years, and that is they're both smaller stories. Like, it's...
Maybe instead of people focusing on the R rating, they should focus on small character-driven stories that actually get the source material.
So both Logan and Deadpool had smaller budgets, which of course made them do tellers, although the people who made these movies wanted to do smaller stories. The problem is, like, so don't get me wrong, I love the Marvel films. One of the, you know, it's, I, like, if I loved Civil War. I thought it was amazing, but everything keeps getting huge and epic, and I think that some of the best Marvel movies have been things like the First Avenger, or you get the Iron Man movies, where they're, like, just single stories. It's not groundbreaking. It's...
Well, the best part of Civil War even was Iron Man and Cap fighting one-on-one at the end, because that's when it was personal.
Yeah.
That was a very intimate and heartbreaking fight. Like, the airport fight is spectacle, but this one is two people almost killing each other.
Yeah, the airport fight is IMAX porn. This is, like, the what makes it good are the interpersonal moments. And so what both Deadpool and Logan, while very different films, have focused on are that character development and actually, like, showing these people. Like, a lot of people talked about, like, how it, you know, a spin on the superhero genre of, like, taking from another angle. I'm like, no, this is so much of Wolverine in the comics in his solo book is like in on this level of personal and stuff like that in his solo book. Yes, in a mainline X-Men story, he's one of an ensemble in when he appears in those. So it's about everything happening. But in his solo books, there were always like these multi arcs about him dealing with there were the adventure issues and violent issues, but there were also the issues about him dealing with not knowing his own history, not knowing his own backstory, struggling with false memories, struggling with a past that doesn't quite make sense. Like, and really kind of that being personally lost. And really, I think what this film captured, besides Reluctant Murder Dad, was Logan as a character who feels lost. And I think that is but a lot of the comics have focused on that kind of personal story besides the face stabbing. And
right.
And that's what makes the character, endure. You know what I mean? It's like you take any so I think what needs to be taken away is that these superheroes, what makes these superheroes interesting are not just the power fantasy or the wish fulfillment, but that during this wish fulfillment, they're also a three-dimensional interesting character. And what both Logan and Deadpool focused on was that character and understanding that as the vehicle first, not the big swirling mm-hmm. thing in the sky with the alien device that has been in like 50% of every superhero movie ever since Avengers.
A big blue light in the sky and a disposable CG army.
Yeah. Like there's, that's literally like half the Marvel movies at this point. And I love them, but you walk away from a Marvel movie feeling like you watched an episode in a TV series. You walk away mm-hmm. from Logan feeling like you watched a film.
Okay. I need to see it. I absolutely need to see it.
Unless you're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, and that movie was fantastic all on its own. Technically a Marvel movie, but...
Can't wait for the second one.
But even though there was a giant thing in the sky, that was much more about a personal conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, he tried to do a dance off.
Dance off, bro.
So yeah, that's our thoughts on Logan.
Yay!
Speaking of things that we all fell in love with in the 90s.
Yeah. The new Power Rangers film is due to come out later this year.
Later this month.
Month.
Mm-hmm. Faster than we expected and faster than some of us wanted.
I'm excited. I'm excited.
Yeah, but to pregame for the movie, Twitch is doing a marathon on their Twitch Presents channel of all 23 seasons of Power Rangers.
Oh my god.
It's the ultimate brain
831 spike. Episodes. And it's gonna. We're guessing that's gonna take about 17 days.
I would say I am not emotionally prepared for this.
Right.
Wow.
They're starting like March 14th, and it's gonna go like for a while.
Yeah.
It's like the longest brain spike I've ever done was I think Inuyasha, and that that was 4 days long. And this is like, you have to understand, we did this in 2004, 2005. So that was like 154 episodes, something like that, and a couple movies. It was, I don't know the number of episodes. I don't care. It was 4 days that a bunch of us tried. And Mike Frey fell asleep on the couch and we covered him in garbage. And then it was in the lobby of Putnam dorm over spring. I think it was I can't remember if it was spring break or if it was Easter. Might have been spring break that we started this, and we just started it and camped out. And like I actually went home and came back a couple of times and slept during it and did not miss anything really in the 8 hours I was gone.
And I'd say with Inuyasha, it's hard to miss much even when you disappear for a while.
But yeah, and Yeah, there was like 10 or 12 of us there. But this is the ultimate brain spike. I mean, 17 days, man.
Wow.
If,
I would
say,
I mean,
if
like
anybody
that's...
sits down and watches all of that, please don't. You're going to die. Make yeah. sure you hydrate and go to the bathroom and eat food.
Yeah.
This is the sort of thing that would if sitting through it would kill a Korean StarCraft player. Don't do that.
Consider, taking breaks for huge chunks of Mighty Morphin and most of
Except,
Turbo.
Hey, you don't skip the Green Ranger saga.
Yeah, well, yeah, keep green with evil. That's good.
Just stay through the whole Austin St. John portion of the show.
Austin St. John is pretty cool.
He's a terrible
but
actor.
I mean, you... What?
I said he's a terrible actor.
Well, yeah. But then again, Jason David Frank is a terrible person. Hey-o!
This is also true. But the original Pink Ranger is actually a good actress and can be seen on other shows that were actually good. Like that one where she played a person on a SWAT team. And I can't remember the show, but I remember that the dad from Veronica Mars is also on it. And he was the SWAT leader. That ran for like 5 seasons. I've seen every episode. I don't remember the name of the show. But she was also on Felicity, which is a show whose name I do remember because my ex-girlfriend made me watch all of it. So there.
So, totally random, but do you guys have a favorite Ranger? I mean, like, Power Rangers is such a major part of growing up in the 90s. Do you have a favorite Ranger or a favorite series?
Well, I mean, obviously, I love Mighty Morphin because I'm 36, and really, I stopped watching after that. So
I'll be right back.
Okay.
I have the problem where I really like Jason David Frank's character.
Mm-hmm. Same. No, I have that
but,
same problem.
Like, he's terrible as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say the guy who played Billy, David Yost, is that his name?
Yeah, David Yost. He actually is a good person.
I like him as a person the most.
So I have to fix it, but I have
nice.
Ooh, White Ranger.
Yeah, I have to glue it back together because it cracked in the move, but vintage.
So apparently we're all talking about we're all talking about the same character.
Yeah, Tommy Oliver is a really well-liked character. I mean, he's as far as and the franchise treated him really well. I mean, is he quite as good as Captain Marvelous? Of course not, but most people aren't. That was a shout out for my Sentai loving friends out
okay.
there.
See, it's like once you get past like Mighty Morphin, I mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Last episodes I watched, Tommy was there as the White Ranger, and that is
I have been told by several people that that Power Rangers in Space was actually really good.
I've watched
and
random.
And yeah, I hear it wraps up most of the story threads from the first series really nicely.
I've watched random episodes of like other Power Rangers shows because like they happen to be on TV or something when I was flipping
yeah.
by. Mm-hmm. Like I think I've
yeah,
saw an
I remember,
episode
like,
of Turbo.
I remember the Ninja one vaguely.
Well, so Ninja Force or when they had the ninja stuff on Mighty Morphin?
No, it was the later one.
Okay, so
okay.
It's like when they were actually ninjas. Well, I remember like seeing snippets of that.
Well, because they were also actually ninja. Okay, so that's the problem, is that not they reused a lot of ideas, so...
It was later.
It was after
Morphin, so it was probably Ninja Force.
I remember flipping by Lightspeed Rescue and going, wow, that's clearly Tokyo Tower in the background there. Angel drove my ass.
The thing is, I'm always going to... For me, Power Rangers has become something a lot like Robotech in that it's something that I absolutely adore from my childhood, but my love of it is entirely nostalgic because now I've found the original Japanese version and I really like that now and I don't really need an Americanized version anymore.
Yeah.
It's and I mean, I... I hate saying that.
I mean, it's no VR Troopers or Mystic Knights of Tir-na-Nog.
Whoa. Do not mess with the VR Troopers, man. I was all about the VR Troopers.
Or Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad. No, I was pausing because that's how you say it. It's Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad. Like, you have to...
Yes, but I want to stick to the VR Troopers for a second, because half the footage in that was from Matilder. And Matilder was the 1990s remake of Kikaider. which means that VR Troopers was, ipso facto, my first exposure to Kikaider. Which makes it the most important one.
But where did he park his motorcycle?
I don't know. Kikaider didn't have a talking dog, so I guess Ryan Steele has that on Kikaider.
Okay. It's, I don't know, like, there's so many of those shows that they tried to recapture. Like, there's Masked Rider, which took one of the Kamen Rider series.
It took the darkest Kamen Rider series and tried to turn it into a ultra goofy kiddie show.
It crossed over with Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't work super hot, but they took the darkest, most uncomfortable of the Kamen Rider shows and decided that was the one they needed to kiddify. It was not a great decision.
That is amazing.
I actually, if I, he's within reach, but I'm not going to grab him. I actually have a figure of Kamen Rider Black RX who became Saban's Masked Rider. And yeah, I like to joke with people. This is my fancy Masked Rider.
All right.
I'm just that big a fan.
So yeah, it's all 831 episodes of Power Rangers are going to get streamed on Twitch starting March 14th, I think at
11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, there we go. So if you've got the time,
Please take breaks. Check to see if you're still breathing now.
Well, the
then.
Advantage to Twitch is, like, you can stream it on your phone, so you can just bring it with you when you go to the bathroom.
Maybe that's an advantage.
Can be like we do at our house and just leave it on in the background while you do other stuff.
I don't know if that's really an advantage, you guys.
No, but think about it. You can go to work. You can still go to work. You can still, go to the store.
You're not gonna miss much.
Just hold your phone up in front of you the whole time and continue to watch Power Rangers. While driving to work has never been more exciting.
I nearly killed a guy, but at least I got to see the Green Ranger story arc again. Oh, boy.
I nearly killed a guy, but I got to see the episodes where the Red Ranger is wearing the Green Ranger's, like, gold armor thing.
Mm. Or any of the Lord Zed. Or any of the Lord Zed episodes, because his design is phenomenal. Just saying.
It's true. It's true. And the voice of Robert Axelrod.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I once found that man smoking in the back hallway of a hotel. You cannot get Robert Axelrod to not smoke in non-smoking hotels, no matter how much you ask him to.
Yep.
Anyways,
let's continue.
At least you couldn't a decade ago. I don't know about right now. Maybe he's quit. But speaking of people who are quitting things, again.
And going a bit towards the con scene.
That was my best segue. Sorry.
that's totally cool. The current writer of Marvel's All New Wolverine comic, Tom Taylor, has canceled his appearance at this week's... this week's... Also known as Gen just reads the article. basically, he's decided to cancel all his conventions and coming to the U.S. Mostly because of the Trump administration.
Which is
pretty much it. Like, Sucks.
Yeah, so he's an Australian writer, and he stated in his stuff that it was due to the hassles that foreign nationals have had coming over, and like some other writers have had some issues, and because he's been so outspoken against Trump online, and he doesn't want to put his family through worrying that when he has to take a 14-hour flight from Australia to the U.S. that they're not going to hear from him if he's being detained. And he doesn't want to worry his family. And even if there's a chance he won't have a problem because he happens to be a white guy, the fact that anyone else would be having those problems, and he wouldn't, actually even bothers him more. So it's he's not gonna do any more U.S. cons. And
so Tom Taylor's a pretty stand-up guy, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, and so he canceled on Emerald City Comic Con a week beforehand. Which is too bad, but it's like, it's honestly like this is going to be an ongoing problem for getting non-US guests to American cons. There was an Italian rock band that was supposed to perform at South by Southwest and do promotional appearances that was trying to come over on a standard, like it was a visitor, like they weren't allowed to be paid while on the visa, but they weren't being paid for any of the gigs, and it's a thing bands have done for a long time, and they were turned away. And Soviet was the name of the band. They spent a night in a detention center, like they were handcuffed, sent to detention center, and then deported back to Italy. That just happened. And we're only hearing about these cases where these are prominent people who have a media voice. It's what's happening to all the average people who are trying to come to this country in ways that have been legal and historically not had problems. And this is kind of a nightmarish situation. And we're talking about it because it's impacting the convention scene. And we talk about the convention scene on this podcast a lot. Like, frankly, more than half of this episode is going to be about convention news. And I don't blame Tom Taylor for making this decision. And this is a frightening kind of indication about where reality is right now.
Yeah, and if this continues, it's gonna hit hard for the rest of the conventions trying to get cosplayers, trying to get DJs as guests, because there's a lot of really fantastic people outside the U.S. who frequently come over as guests, and that's...
Well, and this is going to impact the anime con scene, because we get a lot of guests that are brought over from Japan at some major shows, and if there are issues and hassles, if any of these creators have, said anything, like, it's such a bizarro world that we're in right now, where there's effectively an ideological standard to get into the country. And
yeah, that's scary. It's scary.
Terrifying.
I am proud of, it's not much, but I am proud of Tom Taylor. I think he did the right thing. I think he's making a voice heard that needs to be heard.
Yeah.
But yeah, but he shouldn't have to.
Right. Yeah, no, it's... And...
We lost again.
So I think that's the right time to move on to the next story, don't you, Nick? While we try to get Gen back.
We'll try to get Gen back on.
I'm going to fix your camera so it's not zoomed in on your face.
Okay. And for all those of you listening to the audio, just trust me that there's a camera zoomed in on my face.
It's very
for those
artistic.
Of you looking at the video, there we go. Oh, yeah. There I am, rocking in a manner befitting a hurricane. So anyway, now our next con story is a rather bizarre incident with Phoenix Comic Con when, they sent out a third-party survey. Now, it's not to their mailing list. Now, it's not uncommon for conventions to have mailing lists, staying in contact with their attendees, vendors, etc. They sign up for these things to keep posted about their favorite cons. On the other hand, Phoenix Comic Con director, Matthew Solberg, thought he was doing just a regular thing when he sent his mailing list a survey from a third party that they told him was about cosplay. It was for a research project at Arizona State University. And here, and you know, cosplay survey sounds harmless enough. The problem, of course, is not quite looking at everything on the survey. It had several kind of really personal questions about people's relationships, not the least of which being whether or not participants had ever had sex while wearing a cosplay. There was no warning on the survey about content or, you know, sexual content within the survey. It was just, here's a survey, which was, you know, it was super awkward for poor Phoenix Comic Con. I guess no super harm, no foul, but it made them look not very professional.
Yeah, it's things just got weird, man. It's like the big controversy here is, well, first off, people freaked out because they were afraid because it was a third party survey coming out over the official mailing list. But Phoenix Comic Con has assured everybody that they did not. They sent out the thing themselves, so no third party had access to their mailing list. Period. So there's no real there's no reason to be worried there. Secondly, the big alarming thing was because, like, this is a thing with sexual content and minors are on the mailing list and people freaked out about that. And again, with as Nick said before, there was no warnings about the content of the survey or that it would be asking personal sexual questions. You know, but Phoenix Comic Con has profusely apologized. And it's just, like, this whole thing, it's just funny, man.
I would say it's mostly just hilarious at this point.
It is just hilarious. And, Gen's trying to get reconnected but having issues, so it's just going to be me and Nick for a little while longer. But that's okay, because I'm introducing the next story, and we're still talking about this one. Yeah, Phoenix Comic Con, it just, like, they borked it up. And it's, they admitted it. And it's just, like, you can't make this stuff up. Like, you don't really assume that a con is going to send out a survey asking if you have ever had sex while wearing cosplay. You know what I mean?
Right, that's kind of a weird thing to ask, at least from a con, you know?
Yeah. I don't expect it. You don't expect it.
I certainly don't expect it.
Yeah, so, it's just, it's one of those things that you just sort of, you know, shake your head and laugh at. And I think that we should all just laugh at them a lot because it's funny.
No.
All right. We may have lost Gen for the rest of the episode, but we're going to keep trying to get her back. Moving on to further in the con scene, it's been announced that... Just 7 weeks beforehand, New Jersey's Anime Fan Fest has been canceled. It was supposed to be held April 22nd through 23rd at the Garden State Exhibit Center in Somerset, New Jersey, and this is no longer true. Their statement about the cancellation started with the words, and I am not kidding, they literally started out their announcement with this in capital letters, "Major bummer."
I'm sorry.
And yeah, they announced the cancellation. Now this is
not the most graceful announcement.
Yeah, this is Otaku Magazine runs this convention, and they're moving into the same space that Anime Next used to be in. They held their first year convention last year, and they have said it was due to complications with the facilities, the only reason they've cited for the cancellation. Now, a lot of us have a different theory, and that is that the complications with the facility was that they could not pay the facility because they have no money. Anime Fan Fest ran their first year last year, and they promised vendors that there would be like thousands of people in attendance, but the largest attendance estimate I've seen has been about 500. Every single vendor at that con lost money. I've heard from two or three, and I tend to take the word for it that that just nobody made money at the con. So,
yikes!
Yeah, it's just not good. So that's really the whole factor there is nobody. Mm-hmm. Made money. So no one's been buying tables is really what I've been hearing is that no one was buying tables, and so there was no. And pre-registration was low. Again, their previous year was 500 attendees. 500 when they planned for thousands.
That's not good.
No, that is the opposite of good, in fact. That is, I believe, bad.
Quite bad.
So there's that. second, and so it's curious to find out what's going to happen with the rest of their events, because Anime Fan Fest Baltimore is supposed to happen later this year, in which they are moving into the venue that Otakon used to be in before they relocated to Washington, D.C. So,
mm-hmm.
Jen is restarting her computer. It's exciting. So it's like this is a pattern we see. Like another con that like recently canceled was was another small convention, and it's funny that like I'm like. And that's Lebanon MegaCon in Lebanon, Missouri, which is a small town con. And it like they just canceled like a month before their show. Like because they're supposed to be held at the end of the month, like March 31st through April 2nd. I'm going to tell Gen to just keep trying. The audio listeners are like, what is going on? Why is he talking about this?
Lebanon MegaCon.
Lebanon MegaCon.
Sorry, I just love that.
So, yeah. It's I don't know why their logo has a B in it. I don't know enough about. I've done a con in that area of Missouri in West Plains, OzCon, which is still happening and being held later that and being held like just a couple weeks after that. Like it's I didn't notice anything B like when I was down there. But it's just, like, these cons are going into markets. They are, like, over-promising, under-delivering, and it's really mm-hmm. We're at the saturation point, and we've seen the bubble of, like, there's this idea that you can quick start up a con and that everything's going to be fine and the people will come, and that is just not true. You know,
if you build it, they won't necessarily come.
A new con is going to spend years losing money before it starts to make a profit. That is just the nature of this business right now, and you have to find your timing and your niche. And like it's in the case of Anime Fan Fest, like the East Coast is just glutted. So it's
the Field of Dreams method no longer works.
Yeah. And so it's, I mean, the guys who run Anime Otaku Magazine, they also run Long Beach Comic Con, Long Beach Comic Expo, New Jersey Comic Con. So it's Mad Event Management is the company. And it's just like, there's this assumption that people are going to show up to your show because you put it on the calendar. And it's just really, that's not the world we live in anymore. And it never was. It never was the world we live in. Even like, Wizard World spent decades building up a reputation of, I mean, the fact is that like Wizard used to be known as a magazine company. It's,
mm-hmm. I remember that.
They took over the con that had became Wizard World Chicago because Wizard World Chicago used to be owned by before Wizard took it over was another thing. And like, but that was a con that grew up grassroots, and even they had to like establish themselves in a region before they started. And yes, they overexpanded, and yes, they're part of the bubble collapsing right now, with stuff happening. But like, there's no quick money here. There never has been. The illusion that there is just not real, man.
And it's going to hurt the entire scene in the long run, unfortunately.
Right, because this is the problem. That like these big shows, these shows that like spend a lot of money, they pull money away from the smaller shows that have a stable business model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because fandom is a finite resource.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... I don't know. The whole thing is just insane.
No, you hit it on the head. I mean, like, yeah, what else can you do? I mean, what else is there to do? It's... Yeah.
I mean, and so because Gen's not here, I'm going to take on the next story. And then, because it's in the same vein.
Okay.
It's in the same vein because one of the other shows, and we've talked about this show on the podcast before, and that's STX Bravo, Brazos Valley Comic Con. And that's, we talked about them because a few episodes back, because guests were, people who had been guests at the convention were complaining that they had been charged money on their credit card for rooms that were supposed to have been comped at the last November's convention. What we know since then, the companies, they've taken down the organizers, taken down the web page, the Facebook page has gone quiet, and there has not been a peep from organizer Ben Fritzsching. Now, people are actually, like, guests were supposedly not paid, and now some of these guests are coming forward. Melody Britt posted a lengthy statement on her official Facebook page detailing the fact that her and fellow guest Alan Oppenheimer have not been paid. They went to the local television station that they had gotten IOUs from the event organizer because their guarantee hadn't been paid at the con, and they've written IOUs that it was supposed to have been paid back by watching Genzish. They were supposed to have been paid back by the end of 2016, but obviously that didn't happen. And they both also got charged for their hotel rooms, along with the other guests. And
classy.
Ben Fritzsching isn't responding to phone calls from them. He isn't responding to requests from press. He has not responded to our request for comment. And it's just like, it is just going nowhere. He's hiding. It's just ridiculous. And this is like, honest to God, there is no chance in heck that STX Brazos Valley Comic Con is going to happen again, because it sounds like I know that the owner Ben Fritzsching's wife is undergoing medical care and treatment, and you know he'd have a lot more sympathy though from me if he actually would tell anyone what was going on. You know what I mean?
He wasn't such a dingbat.
Gen's back. I took your story. Sorry.
That's fine. Thank you for doing so.
Yeah. So this is the ongoing problem. This is another situation where he put the con together and just assumed people would show up.
Yep.
Which is this magical thinking, bullcrap, and it doesn't work. It's not a business model.
Mm.
I just talked.
Yeah. Welcome back, Gen.
Thanks.
Do you want to talk? Do you want to introduce this next one? This last one, really, about the Elite Con.
Oh, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
One of you should take it, just not me, because I just talked a whole lot.
Well, Elite Con is a. It's a small convention happening down in Florida.
It happened earlier today, or yesterday, if you're listening to this.
Right. I have no sense of time. But it was a collector's, is a premium collector's, like, marketplace. It really wasn't, like, an anime con at all. It was just... what we would term a vendor room, where
they were promoting. It was a flea market style con.
It was a flea market style con.
Yeah.
And they were promoting very high end, like comic books and figures and stuff of that nature. And one of the rules they had was that they were going. They basically banned cosplay at the event because they wanted people to focus on the merchandise, that high-end merchandise they were promoting. And a lot of people got really, really butthurt that this con did not want cosplay happening.
On this podcast, we don't say butthurt. We say Franklin Delano Roosevelted.
But yeah, a lot of people got really upset that a con would not allow cosplay. How dare they? And really, these people have forgotten that anime conventions and comic book conventions really come from different roots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, I mean, let's be clear. It's cosplay is very common at comic book conventions too. It's, I think, like, my whole thing is that, like, what one of the biggest parts of the outrage was not just that they had banned cosplay, which it's a dumbass rule, but they have every right to have it. It's like, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, like, I saw complaining that, like, oh, it's just a vendor room. That's not even really a con. I'm like, no.
Well, no, it's like, yeah, cons are a lot of different things. It's,
I mean,
yeah,
like, you know what? Like, I can think of, like, three cons, one of which I plan on going to later this year, which they have, like, pretty much zero programming. There is no it's just a vendor room. It's Comic Excitement, which we wrote a big article on, which was the big flop convention in L.A. earlier this year. Comic Excitement convention was, they had a cosplay contest, but that was literally the only programming on their entire schedule. It was literally just a vendor room. Comic, flea market style comic, you know, it's referred to as a flea market style type con because comic book conventions, while all fandom conventions inherit their style and format in many ways from science fiction conventions in the U.S., all American conventions descend from the science fiction conventions. Comic book conventions departed really early on in their history because people were getting together because they wanted to collectible conventions came through this too. They just wanted to buy the comic books because this is before the age of being able to read digital back issues. This was often the only way to get a hold of certain stories. And your local, these started in the days before the local comic book shops. Local comic book shops didn't exist. So if you wanted to find back issues of whatever your favorite series was, like, the only way to get a hold of those stories was to go to a convention like this, and some guy who brought these long boxes out of his basement and had, you know, certain issues and was willing to sell them. And that's where the entire, like, the whole reason local comic book shops exist is because they actually came from the conventions, not the other way around. That's
right.
Fun stuff. Because stores just used to pulp old issues.
Oof.
Yeah, it's...
Oh,
because it was a commodity. It was like a magazine.
Well, yeah.
So,
I mean, it makes sense. Just, yeah.
So historically, like, when you look at what a comic book convention has been, it's, you're almost exclusively talking about shows that are just dealer rooms, and collectible shows came out of this. In fact, EliteCon was formed. I've actually done some research. EliteCon was formed out of what used to be, like, effectively an annual swap meet they were holding at people's house, and they literally called it a swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a dumbass rule to ban cosplay? Yeah, most of these shows don't ban cosplay, but the fact is that to call it not a convention because it's only a dealer room is to really misunderstand the history of the convention scene. You know, if you've only ever been to because everyone else patterned themselves heavily off of science fiction conventions, be they anime conventions, gaming conventions, all this other stuff, which were all programming track heavy. And while Comic Cons did technically spring from that, they went a whole other direction. And because this scene's been split for decades, people need to remember that their area of fandom is not the only area of fandom, and they don't get to declare ownership of words. Now, as for banning cosplay, honestly, I think it actually probably, like, getting people who enjoy cosplay not to come to the show is actually probably beneficial because they all would have been pretty pissed off if they went. It is a show that was 6 hours long and cost $25 to enter on the cheapest badge.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not talking about something for the casuals. The cheapest merchandise sold at the show is $50, and there are things in for sale that up of the sale of like $500,000 in this show. This is
to that effect. I guess I can understand depending on how their attendance was, like it, or in how much venue space they have. Like yeah. You know, if people want to just get through there. A big prop or a big costume could, you know, be really annoying if you just want to get through the long boxes and find and also, Swamp Thing 36. You know,
you get one person who forgot to. Her forgot to seal their body paint. You know.
So yeah. I mean, it's so. While I think that the ban on cosplay was a stupid rule in many ways, I think that the people it would most affect are not the people who would be remotely interested in going to the show. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it was even needed because I think that anyone who like goes to cons to cosplay a lot wouldn't have enjoyed 5 minutes of the damn convention. To start with, it's so I think a lot of the reason why there was outrage also is that there is a lot of bias from not the people who attend comic conventions, but the people who vend at the comic conventions. There's a massive bias against cosplayers. And I see this time and time again, mm-hmm. I see a lot of claims that cosplayers don't spend money, like all this weird stuff. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm an artist at conventions. Cosplayers make up a huge percentage of of the people who
all
purchase
three of us
from
sell.
Me. Yeah. Well, right. But I wanted to make sure I wasn't speaking for both of you. But and I think in your experience probably also that you probably both have made sales to cosplayers.
Yeah.
And also the person who's in cosplay at 3 p.m. might not be in cosplay at 6 p.m. when they come back to your table.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
It's you know, like just because they're not carrying their purse or wallet on them at that exact moment the first time they come by doesn't mean they're not going to come by the next day when they're not in costume.
I cannot tell you how many times a piece of fan art has sold because a person did that cosplay, is doing, mm-hmm. is currently wearing that cosplay, wants to do that cosplay.
Right.
I mean, it's yeah. I sell stuff which is like, I don't sell things with official characters on because I sell mostly my books, by the way, Unconventional Book 7, now available for sale on Amazon.com. $25. It's a beautiful book. Anyways, like I'm selling, you know, original comics, and the fact is I've got no problem selling to cosplayers. It's some of my most loyal readers are heavy cosplayers. And so they're the ones who come back to me every year, and the fact is that really what it comes down to is that the people who think they're not selling to cosplayers either are so face blind because they don't recognize the same person when they come back later in their street clothes, or or they're just
sell. There are tons of cosplayers I know who once they take their wig off, they're hard to recognize. You know,
I have only seen Sydney's hair once.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen her hair once in my life. I have known her for years. I have seen her so many times over the years. I've had conversations, a lot of them, with her. I have seen her real hair once. So yeah, it's because there's this kind of like what really have is a bunch of kind of older vendors don't know how to talk to younger people or really know how to make a sale, and they spend their time like kind of gruffly sitting behind the table, and they don't see because they don't know how to engage in sales properly with someone, mm-hmm. or because they just happen to not be selling stuff that the cosplayers are interested in,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a larger problem, you know, because you can only buy so many Funko Pops. Thank God that trend is dying.
Please, like, faster.
It's pretty much like I predict next year if you're not going to see them. Like they're in dollar
bins at Toys
R Us. But they're
coming out with the Disney ones. Oh,
there's more of them every day.
Yeah, they're already in the discount bins at Toys R Us. You can get Funko Pops for like 88 cents right now. It's no. Like that's a digression. It's like if you're not like people aren't selling things that cosplayers tend to be younger. You have to know how to talk to people respectfully because I know a lot of frankly arrogant older fans who make shitty salesmen who only know how to talk to people who are like them, who I've seen complain about this. So,
well, I mean, it's the same problem that so many of the local comic shops have, and it was one of the reasons I had such a good rapport with my old comic book guy when I lived in Stevens Point, was we would talk about it, and he'd be like, yeah, too many of these shops are these darkly lit, you know, poorly organized places where the guys are unfriendly and they don't want to help new readers get into it. And that is not how you run a business. That is why our entire, the thing we love is dying, is because the people who are supposed to be distributing it are instead being douchey gatekeepers.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah, so...
I mean, there's not much more to it than that, but yeah, it's frustrating.
It's very frustrating. And so, yeah, it, like, is dumbass rule a dumbass rule? Yes.
Yeah.
Dumbass rule is dumbass rule. But, you
know... But at least they warned people ahead of time instead of, like, having a bunch of cosplayers show up and be turned away at the door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like...
Yeah. It's... You know, the funny thing I saw was that, like, because they kept having to, like, people complaining about, like, are you going to give people refunds? And apparently no one requested a refund from the convention. And so the convention had to keep saying, like, no one's actually, stop complaining about us not issuing refunds. No one's requested a refund.
Right.
Out of anyone who's actually registered for the show. Because, again, these are people who have paid at least $25, in some cases $50 or $75, to go to a 6-hour-long convention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people who pre-registered for this show and already paid money to go knew exactly what they were getting into. A bunch of stodgy assholes who want to overspend on collectibles.
But can I just interject real quick and give a kudos to Elite Con for, like, you know, just tactfully dealing with all this?
Well,
it's better than other cons we've seen.
Here's the thing. They did refer to cosplayers as a hassle in their explanation. And I'm just saying that when someone is mad at you, like, there are lots of things that can make a situation better, but when someone is specifically mad at you saying that the thing that they do is a hassle is not a good way to handle them in PR. You know what I mean? It's like it... There are much better statements they could have made. It's like they have every right to have a dumbass rule.
But at least they're making statements.
And deleting them.
Nudge.
They've deleted all of their statements about this. We only have copies because I, after they deleted the initial posts, I had a screen copy of one of them, and I had the text of another. We wrote that first article, and I embedded one of their posts, but they deleted it. But I was smart enough when I embedded it originally to take a screenshot of the post, and so that's why our article has a copy of their full explanation post, because I'm, you know, just very anal retentive about
then kudos deleted jerks.
Yeah. So,
what a mess. It was just a bunch of people. No one was in the right on this one, honestly.
You know, yeah, it's like, well, I mean, I really think the whole thing is it's like, yeah, guess what? They don't want a lot of customers. They want a specific category of... They're looking to get, like, 300 attendees. That's all they want. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. They want to be a tiny show. They literally want to be isolated. Like, they don't want to be for everyone. And while I think it's a dumb policy, it... Who cares?
Exactly.
There are fun cons to go to that want you to come. These people literally don't want people like me to come. They don't want me there because I don't spend a lot in the vendor room. I spend some, but like I also spend my time at conventions usually, which are very programming driven, that have smaller vendor rooms. Like, you know, you go to an anime con with 1,000 attendees, 1,500 attendees, and there's maybe 50 vendors tables. Less than 50 vendors, but like 50 vendor tables at a con with like 1,200 people versus a comic convention where you'll get 200 tables for 500 visitors. Like, I don't want to go to those vendor-driven shows. I feel bad for vendors at those shows because there just can't be the money in the room for a lot of
right.
them. And I've vended at shows like that, and the money's just not in the room for independent artists. It's there for some people, I guess, because the shows keep happening. But
right.
Like, it comes down to the fact that there are fun shows to go to, so why not go to those instead?
Amen.
I like that.
I like fun. And with that, let's take a look at the mailbag. Oh,
there's nothing in the mailbag, Nick. Nobody wrote us. Well, nobody wrote us whose letters we wanted to. To be fair, technically there were submissions, but nothing we're going to read aloud on the show. So nothing from we had people who said, "Hey, look at these elite guys, what they're doing. You should talk about that."
So
the whole letter.
We
so we did that. So there you go. We talked about it. So that moves us on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is the part of the show where I pull out a random book and read a line from it. And the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book it is from. If you guess correctly, you get included in our Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, you get your name read aloud on every episode of the podcast. 2, we list your name. I had a hiccup there. We list your name on the Hall of Awesome page on the website. And 3, nothing else. Because, again, we're poor. Please sponsor Nerd and Tie. The current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamai, Zero, Ren Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Trista, Slitheridi, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsy, The Minnesota Librarians, and Sean Orange. And I've been reading from the same book for a few episodes, and we're going to continue reading from that book, which I have conveniently down here off camera, because if I had it on camera, this whole thing wouldn't work. Which is how one of the previous books got guessed when I accidentally had enough of it on camera where someone figured it out based on the cover. As I randomly turn to a page. In the seconds before he can once again begin moving toward his truck, he has the feeling that someone is watching over him. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact, click on the contact form, fill it out, do the typey type. Now with simpler captchas, or if you have any other questions, any other letters, if you'd like to ask, you know, where did Nick get those stylish glasses? What strain of disease Genprit has at this particular moment? And what cough medicine is she on to survive through the episode? Just go there. Tell us. Ask us. Be there. Exist within the place that you exist. Do the thing that you can do, won't do, shall not do, will ever do for more, and just, you know, have fun with it.
Perfect hair forever.
Oh, I screwed that up.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm still willing to call that an episode. Weird episode, but an episode nevertheless.
But hey, we got the timing good.
Yay.
Oh, take us out of here, Nick.
Sounds good. From here in the Nerder Dome, where we totally are all together recording Nerd and Tie, I am the unstoppable Nick Izumi.
I was over in and forever shall be Trey Dorn.
I am Ken, and I will be Ken, again.
And of course, remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and what's that other
Google
one?
Play Store.
Google Plus Store.
Google Play Store. Google Plus Google Store. My Google. God, man.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Make sure
and YouTube.
Leave us some messages in the mailbag or on our voice line.
At 414-375-0480.
And remember to keep on spockin' in the free world.
And rate and review us on Google Play, iTunes, and stuff, because that'll make us happy.
Mm-hmm.
And join the dance party. Where's the off switch on this thing? Oh, dear Lord. Oh, God. Where's the button?
It never ends.
Where's the
button?
It's the best title card ever.
I am the moon.